Hello, Internet friends, and welcome to The Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and my guests today are Sang Shin and David Yoon, co-founders of Bean. The best way to understand Bean is to go to beanpod.com. That's BEENPOD.com. Beanpod.com, as in, where have you been? And you will see the Bean browser extension, BEEN browser extension. Bean, I would say, is like if Dig had a three-way with, I don't know, I'm just going to let this go. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks morning. For having us, Jeffrey.
Sang,
thanks,
David, thanks. Good morning. So, David and Sang, why don't you tell our listeners what Bean is?
Well, thank you for the intro and the visual, Jeffrey.
I hope you enjoy that.
That's going to stay with us for a while.
We can probably do that. It's Dig meets Basecamp meets Google Hangouts.
Right? That's actually quite...
It's a collaborative.
Yes. It's a collaborative. So what it helps you do...
Social bookmarking plus... video interaction.
I
need you guys. This is what you do.
Okay. No, I think that is actually a better visual than we had in mind. What it allows people to do is it is a social bookmarking app. It's in the version of a
web app.
Add-on
or social bookmarking web app.
Yes, web app.
That's
and,
right.
And the key, actually, that is a very important distinction. It's a web app. It's in the form of a extension or an add-on now. But what it allows you to do is a small group of people who want to have a private conversation about the discoveries that they have on the web.
Yeah.
So it's for real-time collaboration that's quick and private among family, friends, and potentially colleagues.
Or students.
Or students.
We're going to talk about five websites, so we would store them in a bean, in a particular bean stock, I guess.
Yes.
To which I've invited people.
Mm-hmm.
We can comment back and forth about them, like right in the page.
Yes.
There's kind of video conferencing a la Google Hangout or Skype.
Yes. It is video conferencing. It's a live –
it's actually URL sharing, so you can take people with you where you surf. And the thing is, unlike screen sharing, everybody sees their own private version of that web page or URL.
Right. So when I share an Amazon page with you, let's say at Amazon.com or Amazon.co.uk or wherever listeners happen to be, they probably have Amazon. If I share my Amazon page, you're seeing the page I'm showing you, but the recommendations might be for movies that you like or books that you like, as opposed to my page, which has, or if there's a surfing history that's visible on that Amazon page, you're seeing your surfing history while I'm in the same page seeing my surfing history. So we're not sharing a screenshot of the page where you have to go in and blur a lot of confidential stuff, but rather we're sharing web content.
Yeah,
we're sharing an instance of web content, but yes, each of us has a personalized view of it based on the capabilities of that website.
Yes. As Sang said, since it's based on URLs, any personalization that is driven to you on a site is yours alone, and you're not sharing that. And that's the distinction between us and screen sharing apps.
Yes, absolutely. We're just sharing web page URLs with our close family and friends.
And at the core, the bookmarking that we've designed is to allow people to collect, share, comment on URLs
privately, in groups, by
themselves. And just to be clear, you can use Bean or Bin by yourself. You don't need any friends or family to join you, and it acts as a standard bookmarking app. We hope it's prettier. Well,
so for instance, if I'm a designer and I wanted to show five websites to a client as like, here's a range of implementations of a particular, you know, the client wants to know, how does such and such get implemented, or how are people handling such my kind of, you know, designers do this all the time, where we have to show what other people have done to solve a similar problem to kind of feel out the direction the client might be more comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And typically, I mean, I've seen people take screenshots of a website and then put them on foam core and like march them into a conference room. But this is a 21st century way of doing it, where you actually, and we can all be at different computers, right? The, the client can be in the room with you, and another client could be at their home in Iowa where they have a head cold, and they just, you know, they're just online in their, in the, on their home computer, and they're seeing the same thing, or they're seeing the same web content at the same time.
That's right.
And seeing you guys talk, seeing the people who are using Bean talk in maybe a live video stream.
Yeah.
Which was how we got to. So let me ask you this. Most startups that I'm aware of now are kind of on a platform kick. They're more likely to make an iPhone app or an iPad app or an Android app than to make a web app. Most people who are in startups, the web app comes second, or they have a website that's maybe not that well thought out. Or why did you folks what was your attraction to the web, and why are you committed to the web as a platform?
Well, that's an excellent question, and one that we struggled with in the beginning. And I think one of the things that when we first conceived of this idea was that this thing that we were creating was going to be highly interactive and something that required users to be able to produce content. And what we, at that point, this was a couple of years ago when we first conceived the idea, we thought that these newer devices, these tablets and whatnot and phones, were more of a consumption devices. And so, for example, if you were planning a vacation trip, right, it's kind of difficult to do it through your phone when you have to search through all the TripAdvisor or places that you go and log in and sign up and whatnot. Most likely, if you have a laptop around, you're going to hunker down and do your research about the trip. And that was one of the main, you know, ideas that we had, is this could be useful in that situation. And so that's why we decided, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is to think, well, we've got to go mobile first because that's where all the growth is. And that is true. But within the context of what we were trying to create, it wasn't so clear to us that that was the case. And so we had to make that call early on in the inception phase of – and correct me if I'm wrong, if you want to add anything.
Yeah. There, David. So I think that's exactly what we had in mind. But looking back on our decisions from where we are today, what we realized is that we wanted to create something that was not just a social bookmarking app, but something that allowed people to browse socially if they wanted to. So I know there have been startups that have social browsers, but we wanted to distill the parts of a social bookmarking app as well as a browser, social browsing application. And the platform that we chose is so mature. On the desktop and a laptop, the browser is incredibly mature, and we were trying to stretch what the browser could do that the browser companies weren't exactly able to get at. And that's being able to communicate when you want to, with the people you want, share if you want, and those things are not as mature. The platform, the browser on the phone or the tablet is not as mature in terms of an interface, we don't think.
No, absolutely. And in terms of standard support and in terms of processor speed, if I've got a 27-inch computer on my desk, it's going to be able to handle more.
Yes.
Than the phone, as marvelous as the phone is, and as much as I love my phone, you know.
It's great to have that convenience of the phone when you have an idea. Let's say even if you're planning a trip with your wife or your husband or your girlfriend or whatever significant other you have, as well as your friends or your family, you're thinking, okay, I want to go here, and you pick up your phone and you pick one or two places and browse for a little bit. But if you're really planning that trip and you're maybe 2 days away from, you know, making concrete your plans, you need to be you still need to be in front of a more powerful machine, a more seamless experience, to make sure that you know that you've looked at all the things that you want to do, what you, And this is even more so if it's work-related as opposed to for leisure activities.
Yeah, and we now know. A few years ago, we used to say, well, people are using their phones passively only to consume content. That's not true, but people are using them, like, you know, to check a sports score while they're standing in line, but they use the web, they use the browser for other things. We now know that people are using everything at all at the same time. Yeah. We know that I'm literally holding my phone right now, checking something while I'm talking to you in a Skype window and referring to something we're going to talk about later in a browser. And that's the way we live right now, in a very distracted, multi-surface, multi-device way.
Mm-hmm. And that's an important point for us as well, because we know we have to move into mobile very quickly, because we think we have a small window, which is decreasing because people will solve this, right? So if people want to use their iPads or their other tablets more aggressively, people will come up with solutions about how that experience becomes more seamless.
Well, you can use, I'm going to guess that the Bean plugin will eventually could work in a, you know, in the Safari on an iPad.
Yeah, so you can go to the site and use it on iPad Safari. I don't think it's eventual. It has to be done very quickly.
Right.
We have to do it very soon, and we've been thinking about different ways of kind of staging it so that it can be passive at first, but people will need their own browser. Perhaps, you know, we've been looking at creating our own very light browser.
Yeah, that is one approach, is creating a light browser. I mean, on the mobile platform, for example, Socket's technology is still... You got to do some workaround wrapper stuff to get that working in your mobile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're using WebSockets intensively.
Yeah, that's the whole thing is based on WebSockets technology. So there are things that, you know, we're looking at closely and how best to implement the mobile.
And by the way, this app is just JavaScript and CSS and HTML, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, and I think that was
a lot of it.
Yeah, I think that was an important decision on our part.
Right? Yeah,
I mean, going back to the original question of why we decided that, we do think we're pushing not only the technology of web extensions and browsers, but we're also pushing what users expect from an extension or an add-on on their browser.
Right.
And both in terms of design as well as what design includes user experience, but in terms of experience as well. We wanted to make it as seamless and as interactive and without, and this is important, without interrupting someone's browsing pattern. So it was a big challenge, and we thought, look, let's not kind of force ourselves into an iPhone interface or an iPad interface, but let's make sure that we can do the thing that we want people to do with the best technology and best most mature platform we can imagine.
Now walk me through the genesis of this, because as I remember, Bean originally was a solution to a different problem, and this is always happens with startups, right? That the idea moves around and changes in response to what the market is doing, or in response to, you know, trying something and seeing how receptive people are. Mm-hmm. But initially, this had to do more with me opting in rather than having advertisers invisibly follow me in my browser, and I have no control over this. I wasn't some of the original problem that you were trying to solve. How can we let a consumer make intelligent choices about that and opt in and control their privacy? And that
remains the core of what we're still trying to do.
So talk about that.
Yeah. So we started this. I don't know how far you want to go back, but let me just mention this because I don't know if I have any other forums in which to give the tidbit. I was trying to update my dissertation from many, many years ago to publish a chapter from it. And one of the things that I was working on was how behavior, or, you know, users or persons, or in the case of the dissertation, it was a political behavior, democratic political behavior in the U.S., how the behavior, the information on people's behavior trumps the power to predict, trumps any demographic information, the static demographic information, your gender, your location. And then let me make this more concrete, which is to say, I don't need what people consider the most private information about where I live, what I do for a living, how much money I make.
My name.
Right, your name even, your social security number. I don't need any of these things to help people, including yourself, find things that you are looking for, things that you like.
You can find what I like without knowing that stuff.
Yeah, without knowing the static stuff.
I don't want you to know that stuff.
Right. And what I concluded that you need is the behavioral information, which people are less wary about. And now, so the question came up because, you know, cookies, tracking cookies that the industry relies on still, although there's been controversy on tracking cookies from the very onset of browsers.
Right.
As you know, and I'm sure the listeners know more than I. Yeah. But the core puzzle became to us very soon after I started asking Sang this question. Why aren't tracking cookies becoming more and more powerful? Why am I still being sent ads on products I bought? Why am I being shown ads? Right. Why is it so inefficient when I suspect that they have my behavioral information? They don't need anything else from me to figure out what I would like to be seen and what new interesting ideas or articles or even ads, but mostly ads.
Or why? Showing me pages that I just read.
Right.
As you might, since you like this article, you might like this one. Or to use Amazon again, you buy a video.
Right.
And 2 minutes later, they're suggesting that you might want that video. But you just sold it to me. So why is all that?
Why are the tracking cookies not as effective as they could be from theoretical perspective?
To help the consumer, you're talking about. Now, you're not talking about how to make marketers rich or how to, like, you know. I mean, obviously there's a story there and there's potential value to advertisers too. But you're just talking about for me.
Yeah.
If I want to find more of the kinds of things that I like or read more articles that I'm interested in and avoid redundancy and things like that. Why is that not?
Yeah, why is that coupled to the notion that there are lots of startups going around the back trying to link up your really private demographic information with the tracking cookie information to come up with a profile for you. So
there's big companies too, like Facebook, that do that.
Yeah, huge companies.
Large.
And Facebook's another case because they're looking at your social network as well. And that's quite an interesting set of data, as they know and as the market knows. But the question became compounded by this other question of, you know, if they have the best data to segment my, you know, my wants and needs and desires, why is it inefficient still?
Right.
And why are we still having to give them demographic information?
Yeah, the joke is, you know, the Google text ad that – and this actually happened, but it's my favorite story about this stuff, where the newspaper article was about a suitcase murderer, and there was an American Tourister text ad. Like, if you're reading about this man who cut up his wife and put her in bags and shipped her off to Minnesota, you might want some American Tourister luggage.
Yes.
It's like that kind of stuff.
So I think things are improving, but I think tracking cookies are facing impediments. They're facing issues. So our tentative solution that, you know, our aha moment was, you know, who is the best source of this information? The information that we're talking about is the dynamic information, the behavioral information.
The consumer themselves?
Consumer themselves. No one can stalk you better than you can, right?
Nice.
So if you can collect the information, you can edit it. And decide. And the key example we have here is, you know, literally a couple planning a vacation together. Mm-hmm. They're looking at websites, and that the series of websites they look at, and the timing, and so on and so forth. That gives plenty of information to anyone who wanted to be a service provider or be a travel planner for them to take and say, okay, we got some recommendations for you, right? Why isn't this happening? And the key answer is that it's not convenient. Right. What are you going to do? Go through your Google Chrome web history, download it in a text file and send it to somebody. And then it goes through an algorithm and spits back something out. And then the incumbent system as it is doesn't allow that to happen yet. So our our initial idea, as you suggested, was to allow people to collect their data, edit it, and then share it. And that is very much a part of what we have today.
It's the core.
Yeah,
it's the core. It's core with all this other embellishments and functionality
but
features.
We think that is very dry, right? So the reason why tracking cookies work today, or the reason why companies can collect information, demographic and dynamic behavior.
Consumers don't care.
Yeah, consumers, I think.
They don't understand it and they don't care.
They don't care how the
software works. It's like the NSA. Most people. There's this huge story about the NSA spying on everyone, but most people don't care.
Yes, but I think if they had a convenient way to care, so I agree that people don't care, but I think there's a huge segment of the population that cares but says, okay, I'm willing to make this trade-off. The services that are being provided to me are important enough and a core part of my life now, as opposed to 20 years ago. Right now they are part of what I do every day. It helps me do the work, enjoy, you know, my friendships better. So it is an implicit agreement, and it is not just not caring, but caring enough, just not enough to demand something else. And obviously,
not spying.
Yeah.
Not selling it to somebody, but helping my web experience be more so that I find things more tailored, the same way Google does with search, so that it's better and better results.
Right.
I spend less time seeking and more time digesting.
Right. So what we think Bean is it is a social bookmarking app. It is also a social browsing app, but also it is a way for users, if they like what they can do with Bean, the functionality that we provide them, it also provides a very convenient way to start collecting URLs about the stuff they like. And we have a function also of collecting your click stream, which is different from clicks or URLs. Click streams and clicks. Click streams are much more valuable. When you look at a website, how long you spend time on it, you can collect that yourself as well. And you don't have to share it with anyone unless you want to. And that part of the business is our business plan, right? So we have two kind of objectives, and we have two kind of hurdles we have to pass as a company. One is, have we created something that people want to use, regardless of this other discussion we've just had? Is it usable? Is it fun? Is it useful?
Right, because you need, like with any startup, you need a sufficiently large community using the tool before you can then say, move on to this other thing that it does, or this other feature, you know.
Mm-hmm. So if you go to our website and if you start using the app, you'll realize that we are asking you to judge us on that alone. And once people start using it, we want to give them that right, give them that control, and give them that option of saying, hey, I have the best data out there. I can give it to my preferred publisher, my preferred service provider, or maybe my preferred ad network, although those are very obscure. So the market will have to change before someone can make that decision. But we think this is a win-win situation. I hate using these business terms, but it's a win for the user because, if our app is useful and fun, people will almost as a byproduct be collecting the most interesting information about them that helps companies who want them to serve them better. And once the data is available, the companies who want better data can go to the users themselves, and we want to be there to help facilitate that exchange.
Now, is this something that you would do on the website, or do you do it actually in the Bean?
So we are going to do it actually on the Bean add-on. So it's
not in my version.
Version. Okay. Not yet, because I think we need to get – we need to prove to users that it's fun to use, it's useful to use, and that we'll continue to improve it. We've gotten some great feedback, but we have to prove that it is on its own a thing that they want to use, and it becomes a part of their lives.
What community has have you had success with a particular community?
So we've been public since we've had the public release since December, so a little over a month.
Okay, a month. Okay.
So we've had surprising,
interesting results.
We knew that it would be great in classrooms. I was a high school teacher for 2 years, and when I was in grad school, I taught seminars and stuff. Obviously, since I left academia, things have changed. Technology has basically been inculcated into every facet of teaching and learning. Oh, and that, I don't think that's going to stop. So we kept in mind as we were building this thing out, hey, you know, it would be great in the classroom. And one of the first private beta testers told us, hey, if I had this in high school, I could have gotten all A's. And we knew that that was possible. But we've gotten great feedback from educators. So we've been written up by a blogger. And we've gotten
– Where's the write-up? Who's
David Capilar.
Yeah.
And it's in our
it's in our it's if you want to go to our Tumblr page or
and
our,
we've posted our, it on our Twitter and Facebook links as well.
So
and so
the, where is your Tumblr?
So if you go to the footer of the
it's actually it's bpod.tumblr.
Right. What's new? You click what's new in the footer.
Exactly.
You might want to change that to Beanblog or something.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So it's very recent. So that write-up, it was a paragraph long, and I think the key statement was Bean has to be seen to be believed. And we thought that was fantastic. And so we're reaching out to other bloggers. But what the key thing is that, you know, there are some requirements for Bean to be available to children who are under 13 and K through 12 education at all, because schools can't or teachers can't assume that students have
a computer.
Yeah, or email addresses. I think the most important thing is the email addresses, because computers can be provided in classrooms. Yep. And they cannot provide email addresses through the school domain to the students themselves. Right. So we're creating in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we'll launch a dedicated education portal that allows teachers to sign up, have a teacher account, and then create student accounts without emails, and they can control a student account. So it'll be a more robust version of what we have for the core consumer user. Mm-hmm. But we think that's going to be quite exciting. We looked at the competition, and we do think real-time collaboration is still something they cannot do on a browser. And we do think this the design of it and the interactions that you can have on Bean is novel.
Yeah, I mean,
Who are the competition, or how crowded is the field?
So it's a crowded field. So it depends on how you define us. If you define us as a social bookmarking app or a bookmarking app, and those are two different things as well. There's competition. There's a lot of competition in social bookmarking.
I mean, I remember Magnolia. We at Happy Cow, we worked on the design of Magnolia. May it rest in peace.
Yes.
But I don't really know. And then there's Delicious and Dig. I don't really know anything else.
I mean, so there are also people who used to be just bookmarking apps like Evernote and Digo have gotten to social bookmarking. And there's SpringPad. There's Pinboard.
Is that social?
They have a social component. It's not as built out. We started out as how do you maximize interaction between small groups of people. Other people have started with different target audiences in mind. So it's kind of subsegmenting from the population, but they're competition, no doubt. And there's Simbaloo, Delicious. Yeah, Simbaloo is – I think they've had real success in – they're a Dutch company, and they've had real success in the education market.
Yeah, their interface is fun. It's fun looking, and
I
could see how children would be interested in and have fun playing.
It's also littered with corpses. Furl, Simpy, yes. Spurl.net, Nolia,
the list
Faves, ConnectBeam.
Perhaps one of the longer lists.
So you guys have plunged into...
Yes.
It's kind of like Lord of the Rings. I mean, you entered this battle that's littered with corpses.
No, it's littered with corpses, but the troops, the reserve troops, keep on coming. So there's more competition coming up every day. And we haven't mentioned the biggest kind of social bookmarking app, which is Pinterest, and all the clones, Pinterest clones.
Oh right.
But but those guys are. I love Pinterest. The design is great, but they're more for broadcasting and discovery, and it isn't. but I'm sure they can go into our space as well of optimizing their experience for small groups, but
gathering as opposed to broadcasting.
Yeah, Pinterest is gathering. Pinterest is broadcasting and discovery. We're more of a gathering of people in each Bean and the pages and having discussions.
Can I ask you a question? Why does Bean, when I open a new tab, the Bean doesn't show up in that tab?
So thank you for asking that question.
That's a good question.
So we want it to be as...
otherwise, it's persistent.
Yeah. So
if I go from page to click, my click stream is persistent.
Yeah. So when you are on a tab, we wanted to make sure that you're having a Bean session. So we wanted to have that default on or be on persistently. But if you open the new tab, we wanted to be polite to the new users. You have to decide whether you like it. We didn't want to come up on every tab that you have us.
A new one that
Because the main reason being, because you cannot move the Bean. So if the lower right-hand side where the add-on exists or lives is very valuable real estate.
But we've gotten feedback from that, and people want to move the Bean.
I think the Bean should be able to
persist
from tab to tab because I open new links in tabs. And I think a lot of – I don't know what consumers do, but I would venture to guess that most people listening to this broadcast – open new links in tabs, just the command click or option click as just a matter of course.
So true to startup character, we do have a new version that we were literally debating before this interview. Are we going to launch it right before this interview or not? Yeah. So it's literally waiting in the wings. Perhaps it'll come in the next day or
Next 3 days, we're going to release a new version that has two things. One is it's persistently on. And second, you can move the Bean.
So it's drag it around like, I don't want it on the bottom right.
Drag it around.
I want it on the bottom left for whatever.
But we also wanted to make sure that it didn't affect performance too much because we are being ingested.
Yeah, that's one of the core things. Well, so the thing is, it is kind of a unique add-on, right? Like if I've played around a lot of extensions and this one injects itself into the page. And as such, it's more than a browser extension. It's like a page extension. It looks like it's like a hover over heads up display way of surfing and collaborating together. And that's one of the things that I think, literally, I think you need to see it to believe it. It's kind of different. We went out on a limb to build something that I would be surprised if people said they've seen this before. This kind of
I've never seen this.
But that's the kind of risk we took because we thought, we had to do something that was really functional and that was needed. But
yeah, we wanted it to be seamless, meaning that you can review the collections that you have. You can communicate with the people who are also helping you add pages and comments to Bean. And you want to be, you want to literally have a single click to add and organize your collection.
And the key
is that
the thing has to be lightning quick.
Yeah, it has to be lightning quick.
Nobody wants to install anything that slows their browser down.
Yeah, I think that's the death knell for any add-on.
Look at Ghostery and Disconnect.me. Ghostery slows your browser down, and I've killed it because I keep Disconnect.me. Why? It does the same thing, but hey, it's lightning quick. In fact, it improves your browser's performance to some degree.
Yeah, we like Disconnect.me. We recommend it to our users.
I think it's a great thing to use in conjunction with.
Yeah, because you can use us in conjunction with Disconnect.me, and then no one is collecting the data
except
you.
Yourself.
So not only are you collecting the best data, but you're collecting the only show in town.
Wow. Hold that thought. I want to thank our sponsor. You guys take five. Shave, get a quick massage.
Quick.
Very quick. I would like to thank Hover for sponsoring today's episode of the Big Web Show. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. I love this service. And Hover is, there's a lot of domain registrars out there. I think most people listening to this show have bought a domain. And there's a tremendous amount of pain associated with it. It's the black hole of our industry. It is the one place where, in our business, where dark patterns seem to reign unchecked, right? My favorite story about this is, I won't name this particular registrar, but, I actually got in a bidding war with myself over a domain which I owned and had registered there, and they were hiding that fact from me since I didn't remember it. Because anyway, that's crazy. I mean, literally a book apart. I had registered it 3 years before we launched the business, thinking that it might launch as a business. And this particular registrar, who I'm not going to name, they really suck. Anyway, deceptive practices are just the norm in domain registrars. We all know that. And if you've never registered a domain, God bless. And you don't have to have that pain because, Hover, they're owned by Two Cows, who are one of the first companies on the internet, even thinking about domain registration. And they helped set up the rules for domain registration. Hover has a huge variety of domain extensions like .com, .net, country codes. If you're a .uk, that's no problem. .co.uk, whatever you are, they got that. What their whole business is that they don't upsell you. They don't lock you out of your account. They don't make it difficult so that you'll then pay to make it easy. And this is my favorite bit, they have a valet service, a valet transfer service. So if you're at one of these really awful domain registrars where you registered a domain a long time ago and they make it so difficult to leave that you're just resigned to the fact that every few years you got to keep giving these crooks money, even though you hate them. And even though you have you get nauseous using their website, right? You don't have to do that anymore because you can just go to hover.com and call their number and ask for their valet service, and they'll take care of the whole thing for you. They'll literally remove it from the bad domain registrar, and they don't make a profit for doing that. They don't charge you extra for when they move you. They don't charge you an extra fee to move you. They're pretty amazing. And if you go to hover.com/BigJan, right? Big Jan as in Big Web Show and Jan as in January, because that's what month it is, listeners. So if you go to hover.com/BigJan to get started with Hover, you'll get 10% off for new customers, right? So again, that's hover.com/BigJan for 10% off. Or just type Big Jan coupon code in the shopping cart, right? And then you'll have the pleasure of using a nice, clean, simple website, the pleasure of registering a domain name without deception, without cruelty and sadism. And because really, again, this whole thing is like a Saw-like experience, right? Normally. And so these people are just, they're awesome. I really like them. And after this show, I'm going to call their number and have their valet service transfer my domains away from a really horrible domain registrar that I bet everyone listening to this knows who I'm talking about. And I will let listeners know in a future show how that went. I see on my bean that I've got a new message. You guys are probably making fun of me for the way I do sponsor copy. Golly.
That is not us.
Yes, it is. You requested Sang to be a contact. There we are.
I feel so privileged.
There we are. Okay. So thank you again, Hover. Thank you, listeners, for going to hover.com/BigJan. And we are back with Bean. The co-founders of Bean, David Yoon and Sang Shin. Bean, which you can find at beanpod.com, but not spelled BEANpod.com. No. that would be bad. No, spelled BEEN.com.
That's
no,
right.
BEENpod.com, because that is awesome. So while I was talking, were you guys like listening profoundly to that commercial and thinking like, yeah, I've got to move my domain too? Or
I think you just did such a great job.
Yeah, no, I think we are. I mean, this is one of the things.
You guys do this, right? You've had to register.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first. What's the first thing you do when you have a startup idea?
You come up with a name.
And you see if the domain exists.
Yes. No, that's exactly it.
How, who had the, were you two gentlemen working together at a, somewhere else? Who had the idea? Did one of you, I mean, David has talked about his PhD thesis as a, but is that really where this came from, or is that like more background?
No, it's strange enough. That is actual, you know, that is the truth.
Well, I wasn't saying you were lying. I was just
No. That's the truth. The sequence of events, and I'll take it up to when I actually told Sang. We were working in the investment arm of McKinsey & Company in here in New York. So I was
the gentle, loving company that fires people.
Well, I can't.
It's a consultancy for those who don't know. It's a consultancy that that comes into a big organization, right? And helps them reorganize. McKinsey does reorgs. Can we say that?
They're strategy consultants. I was a consultant for a while, but I had been working on the their internal investment management organization,
right.
Which invests in alternative investments in New York. You know, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. And Sang was helping us. I was the
applications guy. I was managing all the applications in the investment office.
So all
do you both have a background in, well, Sang, do you have more of a development background or managerial design?
Yeah, I'm a weird cat. I never really took a computer class, but somehow, I don't know, I'm kind of good at it, I guess. But yeah, no, I'd never studied management. I mean, I actually studied environmental studies when I was in college and economics. So that kind of is a...
That stuff's good. We need that. Why do you laugh?
I laugh because I haven't done anything with regards to environmental studies since I graduated.
Nobody who's doing cool stuff on the internet studied doing cool stuff on the internet, though.
That is true.
I mean, to be fair.
That is true.
We will have to bring in... people who know more than we do at some point, but right now we're using our contacts and we're using developers who we think are quite good as partners.
Yeah,
your front end partners are front end design are MonkeyDo.
Yeah, they are MonkeyDo.
That's correct.
They have been
right here in New York.
Right here in New York.
Who have worked on List Apart.
Correct.
And other super cool stuff. They also had a. And how did you find them?
That is a really good question. I think that it was one late night, way back in the beginning.
Yeah.
And we knew we needed to get help to get this going.
We tried it ourselves for, I think, for about...
You designed and developed it first for yourselves?
I designed things. I think the MonkeyDo guys have seen my horrible or scary-looking designs in the way back in the beginning. But, I mean, I was just... It was one late night, and I was like, look, we really got to narrow down and find designers to really help us. And somehow, I think I was doing some Google sleuthing or just search engine keywords, and I landed upon this page that had this... awesome button that you could click on and would
animate. Awesome buttock?
No, there was this button.
Button?
That you could click on, but it was animated through HTML5. This was a couple years ago, so this was still brand new stuff back then.
You could click on it,
it would animate down and up as you clicked on it. And I said, just from looking at that, I said, okay.
There's the big something. Button that does nothing? Is that what the page was?
That was kind of what the page was.
But the animation was so smooth, and the fact that it was an HTML, we thought these are our guys. And not that we made the decision right there, but Sang and I discussed it and said we need to talk to these guys.
Before they were MonkeyDo, right? They were working at Icon and some other studios in New York. But I knew Tim like from the mid '90s because he had this website called Pirated Sites. Where if like again I'm going to be speaking ancient history for some of my listeners, but there was a site Caliber 10,000 k10k.net, a really beautifully designed site by and like every other week someone would totally rip off that design.
Wow.
And you know, but it was like for some insurance company, and then they'd be like that pixelated 8-bit video arcade aesthetic seems an odd choice. for your Milwaukee insurance company, but okay, I'm willing to concede that possibly you designed the insurance company first and then K10K ripped you off. So Tim would put up these things, and Mike, I remember from, do you guys remember the CSS Zen Garden? Zang, maybe? Do you remember? Because you're more of a...
Vaguely.
So Dave Shea, the CSS guy.
Stuff here.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But so Mike had done this, like one of the coolest things I ever saw in CSS Zen Garden, which is that he'd taken this text page and completely deconstructed it and made it. There were moles and earthworms, and it was basically this beautiful illustration that he created. I guess an illustrator, but obviously yeah. Guy can draw. He's very talented.
Yes,
and
yes,
he can.
So, and Bean, I must say, has a really beautiful and unusual look and feel. Totally not the new flat thing, and totally not the previous look like Apple thing, and totally not the previous to that. Wicked Warren look, where everything looked like an old newspaper that someone blew their nose on, right? But like, it has this strange, organic, very pleasant, playful, almost childlike, almost gamish look and feel, which is very nice. And so that's care of Mike Pick and Tim Murtaugh at Monkey Do. And how do you guys collaborate with them? How does that work?
Well, it's been an incredible experience with them. So we went to them with our idea, initial idea that we told you about. You know, look, we think users should collect their own data and at some point share it with companies, but we need to have something that users will want to use. So we had these hand-drawn things that were...
You had these hands.
Yeah, so I took a crack at drawing
which
these
I
things.
Looked at and said, what?
Yeah.
How are we going to
so
implement
we had the beans. We had the bean stocks. We don't call them bean stocks. They're just pages now. We don't want to introduce too many. And I remember these four two-hour sessions, or maybe they were even longer, when we first met them after we pitched them on the phone. And they were – I think – I recall them telling us, look, we've never done – an add-on. We've never done an extension. You know, we know websites. Mm-hmm. We know some mobile, but this is going to be new for us as well. So we won't be able to kind of rein you in if you do crazy things, except to go back to basic core principles of UI and UX that works well for what we understand human nature to be when confronted with the screen. So we said that's fine. We will take you up on it. We think we love that button, and we started looking at everything else that you've done, and they look great. So we had these very long marathon sessions where we expressed our desire to have users feel certain ways and be able to do certain things. They came back with designs that were just amazing because when you're not a designer or an illustrator yourself, or you don't do that professionally, you have these images of things that you want people to do and see and kind of take away. But you don't think you can communicate that well to another person, right? Even if you talk to them. But they were able to take the core idea and put their kind of wisdom hats on and say, this will work, this won't work. And it was a true learning experience for us. And it's a trite thing to say, and I've told you this before, it's trite to say they're true thought partners, and these words kind of lose their meaning once you use them too many times and describe too many people.
They were heavily involved.
But I felt like they were in our brains and we were in their brains.
That's kind of what they do.
Yeah.
They're also very independent as consultants. They don't wait for you to tell them what to do. Or it's more like they think about it and come back and go, not sure that's going to work, so we had this idea instead, and what do you think? And they're really good designers that way, really good design partners that way.
And before we understood each other really well, we really had contentious conversations about what will work and what we wanted. And that in itself is incredibly valuable because they were taking, and again, I'm going to use another word that's been overused and lost some of the meaning. They were taking ownership of the work and saying, hey, regardless of whether it was because their name will be on it when it came out, or because if they're going to spend any time doing anything, they're going to make sure that the quality of effort is there. But they took it upon themselves to tell us, hey, this is going to work this way, and it won't work the other way.
And so you're a good client.
I don't know if you were. You'd have.
You are. You want to be here? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why you're a good client, because you didn't fire them.
No,
because a bad client says, "I didn't hire you for your opinion. You're arguing with me," and a lot of designers are afraid. No, afraid to argue with the client because
they're so good. Right?
You know, clients paying the bills. I better do what they say. And
I don't think it's because that we, you know, we're good clients. Yeah. But if you see the quality of the,
we just knew they were good. We just knew they were good.
And after every session, yeah, we come back and say, "Wow, that they took it one step further than we thought they would."
And designers should not be afraid to do that. Designers should. That's really the designer's job, right? To like push back when they think that the client is making a mistake or hasn't seen the whole picture, when they think that their area of expertise can help the client make better business decisions.
I don't want to blow too much smoke. It's not just pushing back on ideas. It's not just negative. They would think one step ahead and suggest certain things that it wasn't part of the scope of the conversation, or it didn't impact what we wanted to do, but they would suggest things. Hey, we did it this way. And they would show us, hey, we did it this way because we think it would be cool to have. And that, you know, there are very few people out there who would, you know, they have other clients, they have other work. The artistry that got put into the beans themselves that Mike spent time on, we never expected those.
Yeah, the beans are, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, the add-on itself, I mean, that Tim made, got it to work as an injected HTML app, really. It's a JavaScript application. You're not gonna, I haven't, maybe Deagle has a tiny floating thing, but it is not like your typical add-on where it's part of the browser. I mean, this right. thing is on the page.
And again, so you're out of beta for a month.
Yes. Right?
A month and maybe 4 days. it's beanpod.com. There's a lot more we could discuss, but Mr. Clock on the Wall is freaking me out here. So we're going to have to start wrapping this up. I really want to thank you, both of you, for your time. I'm sure we'll have you back on the show like a year from now to see the direction Bean has taken and the audience and all that.
Yeah. No, this has been an incredibly enjoyable experience, Jeffrey. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, sir. David. So, Sang, David, thank you both very, very much.
Awesome. Thank you.
And thank you again to Hover, our wonderful sponsor that enabled us to bring you this show today. Bye, everybody. See you next time.